Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Bigfoot Notes from the Field. I'm your host, William Jevning. We have a pretty interesting roundtable group today. We have TW, we have Don Gummo, and we have Dwayne, who is a new member of the JRG and is going to be one of our team leaders in the Puget Sound area of Washington State. And what's great about Dwayne is he had a sighting in the same area where we had our Clark Ranch incident back in 1976. His was a little bit earlier than that, but it's the same location. So for those listening, before we get started, go to my website, williamjevning.com. There's lots of interesting things there. You can join the JRG, the Jevning Research Group, if you like. Sign up. I started a premium podcast a little over a week ago. If you want to sign up for that, and it's pretty inexpensive. It's only $5 a month, you know, less than a cup of Starbucks coffee. So for that, you get a weekly show. It's my one-on-one interviews with eyewitnesses. It's very different than this format. So go to Podbean and just type in their search box, Witness of the Unknown, and it'll take you right there. So, fellas, what I thought we would talk about this week, at least to start the conversation, and we can open it up to whatever direction we want to go in, since we have this particular group of people, all four of us being eyewitnesses, let's start talking about why eyewitnesses to Sasquatch encounters are reluctant to tell anybody about what they see. And I'll start off with the most obvious one, and I think listeners will understand this one, because it's sort of the one that's right up front. It's foremost in people's minds. You know, if you see something, especially today, the first thing you think is that I'm going to be ridiculed for what I saw. But there are many, many other reasons why not. TW, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I agree with you. It's the first and foremost is ridicule. A very, very close second would be disbelief of their own eyes. Contrary to what they know exists.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, it's one of those things that's so outside of the framework of your knowledge base that it's like, that isn't supposed to be here. And well, it's sort of a shock.
Well, we're all raised to believe that the Booger Man doesn't exist.
You're right.
And then we see it, and then we're like, he really does exist.
Don, what do you think?
Yeah, I believe what you guys were talking about, and people with positions of authority, too. I mean, I don't know if it's the ridicule they worry about as much as their job or career. You
know? Well, TW, you might actually be able to address that. I mean, since you...
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Yeah, it's... I mean, it's... trust me, it's a touchy subject when a police officer brings this subject up saying, hey, this exists, and you're supposed to be able to at any point be sitting on a stand giving truthful testimony, and people are saying he's full of shit.
Yeah, I remember meeting a state trooper by the name of Mark Pittenger back in the mid-70s, and he had seen the same Sasquatch as I had, because where his incident happened was just a few miles from my home. He was probably one of the very first law enforcement officers to actually take a serious look at what he, because he'd seen it right in front of his car, you know, and I'm sure, especially with police officers, you know, if you actually see something, you're not going to tolerate people saying, no, I didn't see that. Because like you said, you know, your testimony goes a long way in a court of law. So if people are going to call you a liar, I mean, either you're quiet about it, don't say anything, or you speak up and say, hey, this is what I saw, and you start looking into it. And that's what he did. And he caught a hell of a lot of flack for it career-wise.
You know, that's always been my fear, is that after talking to several other peace officers, you know, we've all kind of come to the consensus that, you know, if your boss is kind of looking at you sideways and kind of giving you a half-ass stink eye because You're talking about that the Booger Man does exist. One, they're probably not going to want you to patrol the streets. And two, they're seriously considering calling mental health to come pick you up and observe you for 72 hours, thinking that you might be losing it.
Yeah, and in California, they might consider you what they call 5150.
Yeah.
Dwayne, awesome. What are your thoughts, man? I mean, I know it was you were pretty young. You were a kid when you had your sighting, but for you, it was a long time before you said anything to anybody, right?
It was. I mean, I came out of the chute after seeing it. I mean, I had a really up close and personal encounter. I mean, coming out of the chute, I told anybody and everybody that would listen, and I told anybody and everybody that wouldn't listen, because I was pretty adamant. And the unfortunate, it's the ridicule, I think, is number one. And just the fact that if you haven't seen it, you don't believe it. So, I mean, I've seen it straight up, 50 feet away. I've seen what I've seen, you know, and it's the ridicule. I spent, you know, probably 3 years after that saying, look, man, you know, I was really adamant, but you get shut down by the public. You kind of get, you get shut in and shut down. And I spent, damn near 40 years going, Christ, maybe I'm wrong.
I can tell you my own situation, and we were kids, you know, we were 14 when we found footprints in 1972, didn't know anything about this subject prior to that, and we found, I mean, there were tracks all over the place in the snow. When our buddy John's dad kind of told us what, you know, what little he knew, you know, something like that, especially young boys, you know, it sort of really grabs your imagination, and you're wound. We were wound out big time that day, and my buddy Mark and I went back to my house. And, of course, the first thing, you know, kids are pretty much open books, you know, when they see something or experience something, they're going to tell you straightforward what it was without any filters or anything. So, you know, we talked to my parents and my sisters, and the first thing they did was laugh at us and told us we were full of crap. Yeah, after that, for a long time, I mean, my sisters, you know, we all picked on each other horrendously anyway, but that was just more, you know, fuel for the fodder, and I just didn't want to talk about it anymore to anybody outside of my friends who had seen the prints.
Exactly. I can agree with that completely. Like I say, I almost convinced myself for about 30 years that, I was nuts. The public convinced me that I was stupid and crazy. I know, yeah. I see what I see.
Exactly. You know, go ahead. Go ahead.
It wears on you after all those years. My story has not changed an iota. I'm steadfast. I've seen what I've seen. And God damn it, it was a damn near a religious experience. I don't know how better to explain it. And unless you see it, you just don't know. So it's easy to knock stuff down. You know,
especially if it's something that you don't want to be in your framework of existence, you know.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and I love your show here because I get to say something, and with this roundtable, and thank you guys for the invite, and thank you, Will. This is it's therapy. I mean, I don't know if other people, you know, people that haven't seen it, I don't think realize it, but it's very therapeutic. I know it sounds weird. It would sound like we're nutcases sitting on the couch, you know.
No, it actually is, and I've heard that from so many people over the years. I've had people tell me, they'd say, "Well, you'd make a great psychologist," you know, because it's just because I know what I have seen, and I'm more than willing to sit and listen to what somebody else, you know, describe their encounter. And then we're comparing notes and everything.
I'll back that up a little bit. I won't say you would be. I'm going to say that you are a great psychologist. And I have a little tough time with that word. But yes, you are, because you have an open forum, you know, to get this out, you know. And I've listened to other shows. You already know. Other things, this and that. And I think I'm going to throw this out to the round table right now. It's real easy, because we listen to all the shows, and I think maybe you guys do too, and it's really easy to read out the BS. It's simple, because I look this thing at 50 feet in the face. It's real easy to weed out the BS stories, you know what I mean?
Yeah, what do you guys think about that, T.W. Dunn?
Well, yeah, it can be, unless we end up, and we've ran into people that at some degree have spent some time reading about the subject matter, and they're talented enough to put in just enough information to keep you tantalized and say, okay, that's plausible. And then, you know, then you discover later on down the road that when you really analyze their story and start placing, you know, proven actual events during that time frame, didn't happen for one reason or another. Either it was overcast or it was no moon, whatever. Then you go, okay, you might make a good fiction writer.
Yeah, but I think you're right. You know, oftentimes, you know, especially with YouTube and all these different podcasts and things, it's really easy to sit and talk to somebody and interview them without really checking up, especially if they've got an interesting story. You know, there's lots of great details, things like that. And you're moving forward at such a pace that you don't take the time to stop and say, well, let me go dig into the details and verify those, you know, to see if, you know, what can be verified is what that person says.
I agree. You could be a great fiction writer and not even know it, but happen to one day see a shadow, and all of a sudden you're a Bigfoot witness, and bam, there we go, and then we get the movie exist.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Don, what do you think?
Right. Well, about that, about the stories, that I know. I look for the excitement. You know what I mean? Just that the excitement that the people have in them when they tell the stories. I can tell when people are trying to create a story, they pause. You know, I notice when people are telling the truth, the story just flows right out, and it's the same story every time. And they don't hesitate. There's no hesitation, but it's that excitement I look for in their voice. They get amped up when they talk about it.
And you're almost reliving your own account. If you've seen one of these things, had this experience, when you hear somebody else telling their account, I know for me, the hair in the back of my neck goes up sometimes, because it's almost like back in my own situation. You know, it really brings it back to life.
Somebody you don't know pinging on things that you've seen and felt, it's like, oh, crap, I'm not alone.
Exactly.
You can ask Will. That was when the very first conversation me and Will ever had. One of the last things I said to him is, hey, look, dude, I've got nobody to talk to about this, and I've kept it in for all these years. And he goes, you can call me anytime. We'll talk all day long. So, you
know, we've talked quite a bit.
Yeah, over the last couple of years, we almost religiously talk at least twice or three times a month. So,
yeah, right.
Yeah, Will's a good talker. I love him myself.
And you know, that's the one thing with this subject is, especially when you get past all the wannabes and the BS artists, and if you can find other people that have had an experience, a legitimate one, you know, it really helps to be able to talk to that person or those people, because I don't know. I mean, I always hate to use the example. It's the only one I can really think of, you know, like an Alcoholics Anonymous group meeting where you get all the people that have had similar experiences. And it's like they're the only ones that can really relate to it is somebody else that's had an encounter with one of these things.
Exactly. Been there and done it. Right.
Yeah. Well, and I wouldn't go so far as to say it was a religious experience. It was definitely, in Will's phrase, an underwear-changing moment.
yeah, absolutely.
I can't get into that.
No, I was just
going to
say, it changed your belief.
Well, you know,
it changes your outlook for sure.
Yeah.
My belief started at 13 years of age, and and there was a long time span between that and my more recent experience. My more recent experience was a little up close and personal. It wasn't 50 feet away. It was just a little bit longer than arm's length away. And, you know, when you're on duty at 1:30 in the morning, you're called out to a suspicious circumstance, you walk around the corner of a building, and then all of a sudden you see, you know, you're aiming at what you believe to be center mass, and you're really, you know, the light on the end of your sidearm is hitting his belly button, and you're working your way up, and you're like,
Oh, you kind of think twice about shooting.
Yeah, I ain't got a big enough gun.
Hey, you know what? And that's not so far-fetched. I've watched a lot of police videos that, you know, they shot a big gangbanger or whatever coming at them that said, man, I had a 9mm. It was an awesome gun. It wasn't enough. I need more.
Well, you know, I carry a 1911 45 ACP, and I'm thinking, you know, fat, slow, and short usually gets the job done. No, I need a 46 or a 50 caliber is what I need.
I'm a little passionate about this, and I'm just excited that I was invited to this. It's been a long time for me, and it's been a real mental struggle. I just got to tell you guys, it's really been tough. It's tough. I talked to guys today and told them, hey, I'm going to do this show. I'm going to talk to these guys. You know, and again, you get the eye rolls, that, you know, just the BS that I think you guys all know we've grown accustomed to. It's like, you don't have to believe it, but, you know, damn it, it just happened. You know, I don't feel bad about telling my story anymore. And I don't, again, I talk with you, Will, I don't like the word story. It's not a story.
There's a lot of people out there, a lot of witnesses who have kept an account bottled up for many years. I think a lot of people have never had a chance to talk to anybody. And I've even talked to some pretty high-level professionals who absolutely could not have any kind of a story like this out, you know, but they needed to get it off their chest. I've been approached many times by people, you know, one of my guarantees is to keep them totally anonymous if they wish. And I've done this many, many times, and it's allowed that person to sort of get that off their chest and move on.
Again, it's very, very therapeutic. We're not crazy. We're not nuts. No. It's not four guys here that had a delusion. I'm just telling you right now. Maybe you three did. I don't know. I'm just telling you, I've seen exactly what I've freaking seen, and I'm telling you straight up what I've seen. You know, I mean, there's no bones about it.
Sorry, I was going to say, that's one of the things that I look for, is a lot of witnesses continually tell, like us, other witnesses, that it's real. It's real. What I saw was real. And we know that you're probably telling the truth, but, like, I have a friend of mine who saw one, and he's always trying to convince me that he saw it. And I tell him, I know you saw it. But it's always, I saw the thing. It was real. And I said, I know. He's been telling me since we were 15. He does it to this day.
Yeah, you get so used to the disbelief that you damn near don't know how to say that. But I mean, I was 50 feet from this thing. I get tired of hearing the glowing eyes bullshit. Oh, sorry, yes. You know, this thing don't have self glowing eyes. It's, you know, it. What I seen was some eye shine. I could see into this freaking thing, and we all know that eyes are the windows to the soul. I seen into the soul of this thing. I was infatuated with it, being a young kid and loving animals. And if it wasn't for the damn fence in front of me, I'd have walked right to it and tried to give it a hug, and probably would have been the end of me. But, you know, my buddy flipped out, and it was a Three Stooges scene to the door, because his fear jumped into me, and I was out, because I never did any camping, or I was never really in the wilderness. And I think Will can attest to this, that, you know, back in 72, 74, wherever it was, I mean, I was 8, 9, 10 years old. We don't pay attention to dates back then. We're just having fun. But this happened, and he freaked. You know, we're all different. You know, fight or flight. Yeah, well, he flew. And his fear jumped into me, and I says, well, you live here. If you don't know what the hell this is, I'm out. And I ran, too. You know, I'm like, okay. If he wasn't there, I would have probably climbed the fence and went to it.
Well, and there's a lot of people that you know, you kind of weed through the experiences in the interviews, and a lot of the younger people that get interviewed for their experiences, they talk about their fascination of what they're seeing. They don't have it like at my age, where I'm pulling the back of my pants out, thinking, "Oh crap, I'm going to lose it." And I don't have a change of underwear or a different uniform. You know, kids are different. Sometimes kids have no fear. And
that's very true.
And, you know, you talk to a 9, 10, 11-year-old kid, and they just stand there and look at it and watch it. Or they'll, you know, like one interview I read, a kid said he just stood there, glared at it, and his mouth dropped open. Well, the thing mimicked him. And that's what shocked him into realization that something's not right, and it started to walk towards him while the kid jetted back into the house.
That was damn near my encounter. I was absolutely infatuated with what I was looking at. It was twilight. I won't say this time. I'd say about an hour earlier than now. I've seen this thing silhouetted with a big spotlight, you know, and the eyes, I just can't forget the eyes. The eyes shine, and they were not self-glowing eyes. I get tired of hearing that. The thing, for something that doesn't want to be seen, ain't walking around going, hey, check this out, you know, let me glow my eyes at you.
Laser eyes.
that's crap. What I seen was eye shine. The damn thing blinked. You know, it did everything that it needed, that made it normal. You know what I mean? It looked semi, I can't say semi-human. I never did ask my buddy, because I'd never been in the woods before, I never did ask my buddy, who is that? I said, what the hell is that? What is that? What is that? You know, and it took me a minute to get his attention, but once he walked up, he never got as close as I did, but once he walked up and went boom and locked onto that eye shine, I call it a shivvy. I don't know what else to call it. You know, when you got to do that when you're camping all night, you got to pee and you get that boom, that shake. I don't know how better to explain it, but that's what he got, and I caught that in my peripheral. He just went, boom, I'm out. And then it was a three stooges to the door, because his fear jumped into me, and I'm like, well, crap, if you don't know what that is, I sure in the hell don't know what it is. And I'm the guy that I can walk out of a store, and there'll be two Rottweilers or whatever in the back of a truck, and I just walk up to them and just, oh, look at the big puppies, and grab them by the cheeks, and then the owner comes out and goes, hey, get away from them dogs, they're going to freaking, you know, bite your face off. And I look at them and I go, well, they haven't. I mean, you know, I think you're full of crap. I
got to say, out of all the things I've discussed with Bigfoot over the years, I've never heard that particular description of having an encounter getting the pea shivers.
I didn't have the pea shivers. I had the Hershey trots. So.
Oh, well.
Don, did you have any of those experiences?
No, I didn't.
Well, I can't say that I have either, that's about what happens, because you lose all bowel control. And when you hear the snap behind you, you're thinking, oh, I'm so dead. There's another one here, and I'm going to end up being Thanksgiving dinner. And you turn around and there's this poor dog cowering behind you. And then when I turn back around, it was already making its way towards the darkness out into the
hills. This is something that's kind of related, you know, with on how dramatic the effect is of one of these encounters can be on a person. And I use the example, which is a poor one. I should have used this one as better. You know, only people that have been to combat can relate to that. In other words, they can relate to each other's experience. Now, TW, you're a combat veteran.
Yes, sir.
From Iraq. And I've heard this more than a few times. Now, I got out of the Army before we were in any conflict, so I can't relate to this. But I've had people tell me who were in combat and have also had a Bigfoot encounter that the combat experience almost paled in comparison.
Combat is, it's an odd combination of hours of boredom and seconds of sheer terror. With a Bigfoot encounter, it's just normal. You're not bored. And then all of a sudden, boom, it's right in front of you. And the best way to describe it is the immense, you're at some point so terrified you almost don't want to move.
I guess the real difference with combat is you're trained. You know, we were all trained to go to combat, so you kind of know what to expect. And then you went, so you got to see if it made it matched up to your expectations. With a Bigfoot encounter, you don't know what you're getting into. Doesn't.
You just stole my thunder. I'm just going to say you can't train for a Bigfoot sighting. You really can't.
And that's there's the difference. And some of these people that have experiences that don't talk about what they've seen, some of them actually suffer from a severe form of PTSD.
I was just thinking that, yeah.
These round tables can get clustered, right?
I had a witness write me a couple of years back, and she had a very traumatic experience, and it took her many years, and she heard me on the radio. She said it took her several times to even write what happened to send to me because the experience was so frightening.
Yeah, well, I think I talked with you, Will. I have a guy that I work with. I think I touched on this with you, that had quite an encounter. And I talked with him about this. I gave him your number and said, you know, this is therapeutic. You need to call this guy and just tell your encounter, and you'll feel better when you're done. The guy disappeared for a week and came back. I see him today, by the way, and he goes, can't do it. He can't do it.
Yeah.
He's seen this. This was in Olalla, Washington, kind of Gig Harbor way. He can't do it. He looks at me, and I can see it in his. I can see it in his eyes because I've seen the damn thing, and I can see it in his face. Everybody has a different reaction to this. You know, some people will pull a trigger on it. Some people may just run from it.
Depends on the disposition of the witness and also what happened during the experience.
I'm going to do my best to bring him your way because I think it'll be beneficial for him.
Well, the more you talk to him, and don't talk to him where there's a bunch of people that can overhear it, just, you know, kind of pull him off to the side and say, hey, look, you know, talk to these people. They'll make you feel better. They'll ratify what you saw.
And that's what I've been doing, is pulling them aside, because I have talked to them, and then we get a couple of guys, you know, that overhear the conversation and go, Jesus Christ, what does it eat? Where does it live? How does it do that? And it's like, you know what? Stop it.
I think a big problem with witnesses coming forward is just that they don't feel like they're going to get acknowledged for this really horrendous experience that they had. Instead, I mean, it makes it worse if you're getting made fun of.
Yeah, when you're criticized and penalized for saying this is what I saw, that
and it's bad enough to begin with.
Yeah, it makes
right. I'll tell you, if I can hop in for a second here and. Believe me, I don't want to stomp on you guys' feet at all. I used to do a lot of CB stuff, stomp quick. Don't want to do that. But this guy, you know, that popped in and just, he opted to jump into our conversation because I'm sitting here with this guy trying to help him because I get it. I've seen it. He's seen it. And he was really young and it freaked him out. It says it killed his dog. Anyway, I'll let him tell you a story. I'm going to work him. But, I proved to this guy that jumped in our conversation involuntarily, whatever, and said, it's all bull crap. And I told him straight up, I said, you have seen a Bigfoot. You just don't know it. You just don't know that you've witnessed one. And he goes, how do you figure? I said, did you ever see have you ever seen a gorilla? He goes, yeah. Did you ever see the one at the BNI out in Lakewood? Yes. I said, then you've seen a Bigfoot. I said, because that thing was a thousand-year mystery before a bunch of guys went up and found it in 1902. That was a big, giant, hairy man in the woods. So you've seen a Bigfoot in some form.
Everybody, prior to the gorilla's actual, discovery, but recognition scientifically,
yeah.
Many of the stories by eyewitnesses are very similar to the Bigfoot eyewitness to stories.
There's a giant hairy man, a big ass hairy man in the woods.
And and the subject was kind of treated the same.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It happened. And I would like to think that we are on the cusp of making this happen now. This is a smart ass freaking monkey in the woods, whatever you want to call it. I don't know. I know I looked at it face to face at 50 feet. I'm convinced, 100%. I think all y'all are too. Either that, or it's four guys sitting here telling fishtails, and that ain't it.
No.
We've all caught fish, and we've all caught small fish. This fish, you don't catch all the time. Explain it. I mean, my apologies here. I'm real adamant, and again, I appreciate talking with all you guys, because this has been a 40-year murder mystery for me. I don't know how to better to say it. I spent 30 years denying it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You got to sort of get it out. You got to have a platform to do that.
Can't deny something for that long knowing you really saw it. You're never going to really accept that, you know?
Absolutely, I agree.
I can't unsee it. I can't unsee it. I just can't.
Right.
No, and that's what makes it bad, is there's no mental rationalization you can do that justifies what you saw in a normal, what you've already learned context.
Here's something to throw out to you guys, and this is a good one. It's something we hear all the time. All these people that have never seen one want to see one so bad, and the four of us have seen these things. Let's go around the table. Don, would you advise people to go out and try to find one of these things?
Would I? No, not at all. when I went out looking for them, I'm just glad I was on my porch when I had the sighting, so I didn't have the fear and panic. It was more fascination for me. But no, I wouldn't recommend it to anybody. They're dangerous. You know, they don't want us to see them, and they will do whatever it takes to make sure we don't, you know.
Right, and that's the thing in your situation. You had a place to go to that was safe,
right,
in your mind.
Yeah.
So it wasn't so bad. TW, what's your opinion?
No. Anybody that purposely goes out and wants to make contact with these creatures are inviting a whole plethora of grief, heartache, and more likely pain. If you want to try to befriend one, I've got a book out. It's called Bigfoot Creatures. It's on our website. How to befriend, habituate.
I remember seeing that.
And other things, and woo-woo, you should not do. Because at some point, you'll either end up in a tree twisted around a limb, or you're going to end up being squatch poop. So, yeah, no, it's not advisable. My first experience, the creature actually followed me, my younger brother and cousin, all the way back to it, an old general store that had a street lamp to it. And then later on, we found out that a guy that lived down the road from there, who raised prized coonhounds, and that was how he supplemented his income, was raising these coonhounds, had lost two litters of pups. They just disappeared. So nobody really knows what happened to them. And they were in a caged kennel.
Four people that knows what happened to them.
My suspicion is that they ended up being food. My second experience was a month and a half, almost 2 months long. You know, it just wasn't one person. There were several people that had encounters.
You had a whole series of things happen.
Yeah, and now this year's been really quiet. You know, there's been no talk, there's been no rumors, there's been no reports. But that year was an anomaly where I got a sneaking hunch, and me and Will had discussed it, is that they kind of don't, that they'll habituate the same areas year in, year out. They migrate, but they don't always go to the same spots or the same locales each.
Right. Or it may be like Bluff Creek. They may not come in there, but say once every 2, 3, 4 years, something like that.
Exactly. And that's what I'm thinking is the case here, is that, the first encounter wasn't really an encounter. It was, a bunch of the big problem around here is stray pit bulls. There was a bunch of pit bulls found dead. And then the second instance was an old man that walked out on the porch and got swiped at. The third instance was a 15-year-old boy that got basically shucked off his bike.
And it ripped up the 10 speed or whatever. Well, in the tree. I've heard that.
Threw it in the tree. The yeah. other one was my experience where we actually directly after that 15-year-old boy, we went into the same locale, and me and a deputy sheriff got roared at to the degree that the deputy sheriff peed his pants. He couldn't even function the rest of the night. And then the last experience I had was there at Thanksgiving when, you know, I walked up on the thing, and it was an old lady that said, "Somebody's looking in my house." Show up to the scene and walk around in the corner of the house, and there it was. Threw a piece of firewood at me, and just barely missed my head. So, you know, and then we had some, not so much experiences as much as just kind of trying to find out what's going on, you know, to the tune of $60 worth of salt licks and mineral blocks, you know, throwing those out, and then discovered that they're actually, you know, breaking them up into smaller pieces. And they take a little bit of the salt and a whole lot of the minerals. And then, of course, you know, my buddy, God love him, decided that, oh, crap, he's out there. You know, we can't have him out there putting out mineral licks. These pecan orchards.
You don't want to keep them around.
So they're out there collecting them up after I'm throwing them out there. I'm like, dude, those things are expensive. You know, they're $12 a pop. What the hell are you doing taking them out there? So, you know.
But that goes back to the fact that these things are relatively dangerous, and they don't want anything, you know, to attract them to a location.
Exactly. So, well, or keep them around longer than they need to be.
Can I chime in real quick? Anyway, I'm going to chime in and say, I kind of got on against you guys. Yes. Go see it. Do it. Because I don't know about you guys. I spent too goddamn long looking at eye rolls and I believe you. And it's killing me.
Here's the thing. I've had two sightings with these things, total of three Sasquatches. The first experience was one that you don't want to have, because that was, you know, only about 15 feet away. And that was an underwear changing moment for me. The second one in 1988 was the kind that everybody wants, where you're in the car, you're out driving, and then across the river, you see one heading off into the brush. I think that's the one everybody wants. That's not the one you're likely to get, though, folks.
Unfortunately, you can't pick your encounter. You just can't.
No, absolutely.
They pick it for you.
That's a shame of it. You can't pick your encounter.
The bad part is you don't tell people, oh, go out and look at the nice grizzlies. It's kind of along the same lines. It's not, correct. Yes, everybody wants to see one. I understand that. But on the other hand, you know, you're not going to go out and take the family out to go look for grizzlies.
Right.
These guys are kind of the same. They're the same disposition, or very similar.
Right. But everyone knows what a grizzly is, you know.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. But if you're going to go look for these things, you better understand that they're an animal, a top predator, and that's how you have to look for them. You couldn't.
Absolutely.
You know.
Oh, they're an apex predator.
I feel they are the master of their environment. They're smarter than us in the woods. Quickie,
exactly, yeah.
I think, Will, I talked with you that I can see it. And don't get me wrong. I can see a stupid deer. I got a freeway. If you guys want to hear it, I can open the door real quick. I have a freeway in my backyard. You hear this crap? I can see a deer sit right in my backyard out my apartment. You know, and look at it, but I know guys that hunt adamantly that go and spend all year putting trail cams up, this and that, and finding where all the deer are, and then go hunt for 2 weeks and come back with nothing because they don't see shit. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Right.
My bad. And if a And again, I don't want to call it a dumb animal, but it's an animal that learned that we want it. It's learned how to get the hell out of the way. I don't know why is it reasonable to think that something slightly more intelligent, let's just say, can do better?
You have to remember, and I've mentioned this on a number of shows, especially talking to our forensic anthropologist, and he stresses the point all the time. Everybody has sort of the impression that animals are stupid, and they always like to compare dolphins and elephants and things like that, and dogs to people. Mm-hmm. Primates as a whole are infinitely more intelligent than any other animal species on the planet. And chimps, especially chimps, you hear about this more and more today, where they have great problem-solving capability. You know, they'll watch their handlers and all the routines and things they do, and they're able to get out of their locked enclosures.
And that's
and very, very smart methods of doing it sometimes. So guys are right up there. I mean, they're not human intelligent, but they're not stupid. They're very intelligent.
But they also are a lot like us in the way that when they're pissed off, they get crap done. They handle it quickly and efficiently. And that's what humans do. That's why we're the creepiest predators on the planet. We just destroy everything.
Exactly.
And chimps?
Oh, we're a very vicious species. How we got to be top predators.
And that's one of my main arguments. Over a year ago, I had to present an argument in college at a class I was taking. And you would not believe the ridicule I got from kids that are, you know, half my age. And
that are supposed to be open-minded.
Yeah, it's supposed to be open-minded, mind you. My argument is, why would we see these? We're the most violent species on the face of the earth. We don't attack by ones. We attack by groups.
And, we're pack hunters.
Yeah, and you know, because that was one of the arguments is, well, why don't we see them more often? Well, why would we see them more often? They're not stupid.
No, that's right. And there's really two main reasons why we haven't gotten closer to them, you know, and since the 1950s when the subject really come out and grabbed the public's imagination. That's number one. And you can look back at Native American tribes all over the continent, and most of them talk about there being friction between these early humans and these creatures. And there's reasons for that, obviously, because they say they're cannibals. They were taking, you know, people, and it wasn't mating. They were eating them. So the friction between humans and these creatures, and the fact that we are a very violent species, it's only been since we decided to get civilized, and especially in just recent decades, a long history. Up till the 70s, we'd go out and shoot at anything that moved out in the forest. And the other one is the fact that they are so adept and they cover such wide areas and their ranges. They're on the move all the time. So with those two factors, those are the main reasons why that we haven't caught up to them that easily.
I need to interject on you there, Will, but I'm going to say, we've evolved to the point that we'll shoot anything in the city.
Well, we sort of turned on ourselves.
We'll shoot anything anywhere. We are that bad.
But I remember growing up that way. I mean, heck, you know, when I had my first actual sighting, and this was 2 years after we found the footprints, you know, my dog was going crazy that evening, and my dad always told me, he said, hey, if there's... You know, we had a lot of skunks and raccoons and all kinds of animals that would come in the yard because we had a forest that was right next to where their house was. What's that?
This is up in my area, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was grim.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there was always animals coming in the yard. We saw them all the time. And, you know, I had my dog out there. He was tied to his house at night. And my sisters had cats. And you know, the animals would come up and eat their food. And we didn't want them hanging around the house. So, especially if they had rabies or anything, that was kind of the big thing then. And my dad, that was his blanket reasoning. He says, you know, they might be rabid. Don't let them in the yard, go out and shoot them. So when he was barking that night, I figured, you know, skunk, raccoon, something like that. So I grabbed a .22 instead of my 12 gauge or my hunting rifle and a couple of bullets and let him go. And I said, go get him. And he went flying out to the timber. And as I got you know, near him, he wheeled around and come flying at full speed past me back towards the house. And I thought, what the hell? You know, never saw him do that. I had the dog for 13 years, never saw him behave like that before or after.
Animals don't lie. They will chew you up in a million pieces. You can walk in the house, look at them, and they'll lay down on their belly and go, damn, yeah, I screwed up. And they don't lie. People lie. Animals don't. So you have to believe what like that happens, you got to buy into it. You have.
Oh, sure, but I didn't have any idea. I had no idea. I, you know, he had gotten into a porcupine once and had a whole muzzle full of quills. So I was thinking, oh, maybe he finally learned his lesson, you know, and decided not to tangle with a porcupine. So I chambered around and walked through the low-hanging Douglas fir branches. You know, when I came into the clearing on the other side of the branches, here was this massive thing standing there under this old maple tree, you know, moving its foot around in the leaves. And you talk about an underwear changing moment at that point. So, you know, the point is, you know, up until I'd say the 80s, really, when it really started to change, people would go out and just shoot at anything. And these things knew, I mean, we were still a relatively violent species toward wildlife up until, like I said, around the 80s. Wouldn't that be a fair assessment, guys?
You know,
people really started, people saying, hey, don't do this.
You know, screwing everything up.
Yeah. But I think that's part of the reason now that we're maybe having more, we're either having more sightings or people are more willing to talk about it because the subject is more out there, or maybe a combination.
I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
A little bit of both, yeah.
And the internet gives people the ability to research this now and to really get the facts, you know, instead of mockery.
Yeah. It might also be a reason or a cause of these things becoming more aggressive. They may have always been that way, but more reluctant to be that way. Because you look at the old stories, the more remote an incident happened, the more aggressive the creature seemed to be away from human population.
Yeah.
These days, it sort of happens everywhere.
Yeah.
Right.
So maybe the fact that we're less violent, you know, less likely to go out and shoot something, then their true nature can actually, you know, be the way it is any place.
Yeah. Oh, it could be encroaching into their areas now, too. You know?
Well, yeah, right.
What was the name of that town in Wyoming that they actually had one in town that was chasing cars on Main Street?
Oh, I've heard this in a couple places. I remember back in the mid-90s, there was a place, the Fort Bidwell Indian Reservation in Northern California, actually had a group of these things terrorizing the people in this tiny community. They would come right in there. And this, I found this out from a friend of mine who was a Klamath Indian. He called. We were talking about going down to the Klamath Reservation where he was from, and he called one of his aunts at Fort Bidwell. And she says, you guys ought to come down here. These things, you know, and the soil is such in that area that there were tracks for miles where these things were back and forth. And they in broad daylight, they'd come right up on people's porches. And the town's not very big. It's just a tiny place. But they would lock their doors and stay inside because they were scared to death of these things.
Wow.
So it does happen occasionally. We just don't hear a lot about it.
Right.
TW, where was, do you know where this location was that this was going on?
I think it was like Rawlings, Montana, or Rawlings, Wyoming, or it might have been that one of those little towns around Cheyenne that's just a hole in a wall little town that's just, you know, 10-15 miles outside of one of the bigger towns. But yeah, I forget who it was that was telling me that. They actually had one. The whole, even the town newspaper brought it up, saying that, you know, there was reports by citizens that these things were chasing cars.
Huh.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
You know, and it was right on Main Street. So, they've been known to come into to more urbanized areas. Edwards Air Force Base, where they used to land the shuttle. I know of several SPs that have told me and told other people that there was a standing order. You leave these things alone. Don't mess with them. They have one. They had them named. They have one they called Pigpen that was by himself all the time. They'd always catch him behind the NCO club or the officers club diving in the dumpster. And but they called him Pigpen because he was always a mess. They actually got pictures, but the Air Force won't release them. So, you know.
I'm sorry to jump in. I 100% believe this. I talked with Will off air about this because I know he was stationed at Fort Lewis where I was at. And I think I know Fort Lewis better than anybody that was ever stationed there because I grew up there. But, yeah, I believe it. I totally believe it. I don't know, Will. Yeah, I spent many, 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 many hours out there. I've been shot at by poachers. And you probably know. I'm sure you guys ran into, you know, some drunk dude in your station wagon hunting deer. And I may be wrong on that, but I know I ran into him. And it was like, holy crap. You know, I remember, you know, my hippie age, I was a little hippie. Running through the bush going, holy shit, this guy's shooting at us. Holy crap, we got to get out of here, you know. And we knew that place like the back of our hand because that's just where we played. That's where we could go, you know, shoot birds, BB guns, yada, yada.
They were shooting planks at you. If they were shooting a real thing, you wouldn't be here talking to us.
No, I'm talking about a drunk guy with 12 beer cans on his hood. Because back then, and you guys got to remember, this was way before 9/11 crap. You could just very easily, you know, drive right out and go anywhere on all these woods in Fort Lewis, and it was free range. And
you could, I mean, because nobody cared. I mean, there was nothing out there except training area.
Exactly. I remember sitting at McCord and watching, you know, the jets land and blow their parachutes, and you know, we had an old cemetery out in Lakewood, where you could just peel the fence apart and just go out there with your motorcycles and whatnot and just explore, you know, explore Fort Lewis at your leisure. You know, I ran into, there's a couple of times that...
We only got about 3 minutes left. I'm going to go around to each one of you.
Okay.
And as eyewitnesses... How would you advise people to, and I'm saying us, I'm going to be selfish, talk to us about your encounter? Don, let's start with you.
Okay, sorry, Will. Could you repeat that last part of the question?
Yeah. Would you advise people to talk to us, I'm being selfish here, the Jevney Research Group, to come forward and talk to us about your encounters?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, you hear it being therapy, for many people. I mean, just to share it and to talk to other people that have experienced the same thing, it would help you out tremendously.
Dwayne, how about you?
Yes. Tell your story to anybody and everybody. I don't care if they believe you or don't believe you. I don't care if they eye roll. Tell your damn story because it will make you feel better. And if you can find an avenue like your show, just tell it because it's not biased. These guys believe you because it happened. It's the reason I'm on the show right now, for crying out loud.
TW, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, the human mind is a funny organ, and a person needs that ratification, that justification, that confirmation that what they saw is real. And you know, to be selfish, yeah, come to us. We're not going to pass judgment on you. We're not going to, you know, ridicule you or make fun of you. Unless you're talking about you saw one braiding manes and having its way with a cow, then yeah, we're going to make fun of you. Ruthlessly so. But it's all in good nature, and we'll pat you on the back, maybe even buy you a beer, set you up with some counseling, because you actually have imagined seeing something. But, yeah, I mean, you know, by all means, if you come to us and you want to stay anonymous, we'll accommodate you, and we understand why.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very important, I think, you know, to for people to understand that, and I know maybe other groups do or don't, but one of our real staunch foundations is people's right to be anonymous. Even if you don't want your story out anywhere, just providing a place to talk to and sort of get it off your chest. The hour goes by too fast, fellas. We're going to have to do this again, maybe continue with this topic or another one. Thanks for joining me, guys. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Will.
Awesome. I love this show.
And Dwayne, welcome to the JRG, by the way.
You know what? Thank you. This is, again, a big therapy thing. This is good for me. And I've got lots of, I think you already know, I got lots of goodies for you that, you know, reflecting back, I've got something for you that I think you'll like.
I appreciate it. Well, let's wrap it up, fellas. And everyone, be sure to go to the website, williamjevning.com. This show is weekly, you know, recommend it to your friends if they're interested. It's good entertainment. We have a good time chatting and laughing and discussing interesting things. And if anybody's interested, I have a premium show I just started. It's called Witness of the Unknown. It's on Podbean. I know people are interested in listening to the show on iTunes. We're going to be working on getting that on iTunes. But for the time being, if you go to Podbean, you can get an app for your phone for the show. You don't have to do it just on iTunes. You can get it through Podbean as well. So thanks, fellas. Everyone, join us again next week, and thanks for listening in.